Good evening and welcome, dear friends. So good to see all of you here this evening. Your presences are each a blessing to all of us. So we come together to enter a circle of great intention, to take our place, to engage in a conscious exchange, to listen deeply, to feed, and to be fed by the impressions we are given. May our work be food for lifting the consciousness of our world and ourselves. So we begin in the name of God, the Father, the Source, God, the Son, the Omnipresent, the All, God, the Holy Spirit, immanent, the Spirit of life, eternally one and whole, yet manifested as the many. Amen. So tonight we may recall that the date of the death of Maurice Nicol was August 30th, it was 1953, and we certainly honor and remember this great man and wish to celebrate his life and carry forth his teaching for our time and our place. And yet tonight we also remember someone else, perhaps someone little known to us. And that is a woman by the name of Louise Gepford March. There are those whose journey it is to be up front, to be known. And there are those of us who are behind the scenes, perhaps invisible, but all are needed and all can play their role. Louise March became Mr. Gurdjieff's secretary, the translator of Beelzebub's tales into German, which was no small feat, and also Mr. Ospinsky's In Search of the Miraculous in German. There is a little book of her letters and recollections entitled The Gurdjieff Years, 1929 to 1949, that was compiled by a student of hers. And in it, we can learn that Louise March was born on March 30th, 1900. It is said that as a child, she felt a stranger in her own household, even her own mother saying, "You should have been born into another family." Interesting, a number of years later in the 1930s, Mr. Gurdjieff visited her family's household and said, "How possible such daughter have such mother? Such mother have such daughter. I take pity, take daughter into my family." And thus it came to be. It is also said that as a young woman, she felt she would always meet a great man one day. She recounts in her recollections, "I imagined finding him in exotic circumstances, in the Himalayas, or perhaps at Fujiyama." The fulfillment of this expectation did come about, but not where I had dreamed. Here in America in 1929, when I met George Ivanovich Gurdjieff. He called me to service, to serve him and his mission. I recognized him as the great one I had anticipated, and everything changed. Many years later, she noted, "Now that I'm in my 80s, I think helping people to discover who they are is the only help of real worth." And so, Louise March, we celebrate your life this evening, and may our evening be dedicated to helping to discover who we are. So now is the time of remembering, self-remembering, that we have a possibility that is here. We can receive it. gathered and aware and awake to the fine energy within and among us. Each of us is here to learn more, to be more. We're at this particular place and time for a purpose. It is a rare privilege. Will I be receptive to these ideas? Will I pay my part? What am I here for? Let us not forget that what each of us brings matters. How we come and attend matters, for this is what we are emanating to one another and what the group then emanates out into the world. So now we place ourselves with intention here, now, in imminent trust, taking perhaps all the heaviness of life and lifting it in hope and love in the midst of our own vulnerability and helplessness. With back upright, stilled and contained, we scan our bodies, perhaps noticing and then letting go of any points of tension and constriction. Fidgeting and movement. We breathe in deeply all every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that passed through us this day, through our world today, everything that hurt, that confused, that created fear, that left us feeling powerless, less than, more than, everything. Everything that uplifted, that loved, that brought joy and hope, all affirming, all denying. And we hold it as offering, reconciled, as food for being. We lift it and ask that all be transubstantiated in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as beloved of God. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. I hand over complexities. I hand over plans. I hand over the anxieties and small fears of my heart. I commend all to the divine human life. I am here. I am. I wish I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. And so it is that now I am ready. So we share the screen for our time of Lectio Divina. And our passage from today's email will be read three times with a silent pause in between each reading. When I see your heavens, the work of your hands, the moon and stars that you set in motion, what is man that you are mindful of him? Woman, that you should care for her. Yet you made them a little less than gods, crowned them with glory and honor, with a goodness capable of unlimited development, indeed of becoming transformed into Christ and deified. We are to take a journey, sometimes called rebirth or regeneration, sometimes called the attainment of real I. The journey is an ascent to higher being, though it is also a descent into the depths of oneself. For to find ultimate reality is also to find ourselves in essential being. There are instructions for this journey, signposts along the way, wayshowers who have traveled before us. Yet each of us must fulfill our particular calling, purpose, gift, destiny, and the great body. Then we will have attained the secret, end, and hidden meaning of our creation, a whole and complete person. When I see your heavens, the work of your hands, the moon and stars that you set in motion, what is man that you are mindful of him? Woman, that you should care for her. Yet you made them a little less than gods, crowned them with glory and honor, with a goodness capable of unlimited development, indeed of becoming transformed into Christ and deified. We are to take a journey, sometimes called rebirth or regeneration, sometimes called the attainment of real I. The journey is an ascent to higher being, though it is also a descent into the depths of oneself. For to find ultimate reality is also to find ourselves an essential being. There are instructions for this journey, signposts along the way, wayshowers who have traveled before us. Yet each of us must fulfill our particular calling, purpose, gift, destiny, and the great body. Then we will have attained the secret end and hidden meaning of our creation, a whole and complete person. When I see your heavens, the work of your hands, the moon and stars that you set in motion, what is man that you are mindful of him? Woman, that you should care for her. Yet you made them a little less than gods, crowned them with glory and honor, with a goodness capable of unlimited development, indeed of becoming transformed into Christ and deified. We are here to take a journey, sometimes called rebirth or regeneration, sometimes called the attainment of real I. The journey is an ascent to higher being, though it is also a descent into the depths of oneself. For to find ultimate reality is to also find ourselves in essential being. There are instructions for this journey, signposts along the way, wayshowers who have traveled before us. Yet each of us must fulfill our particular calling, purpose, gift, destiny, and the great body. Then we will have attained the secret and hidden meaning of our creation, a whole and complete person. A whole and complete person. So be it. So you're invited, as you are moved to do so, to share with us what you receive from this passage, perhaps from the image. What came to you, met you? Just indicate your willingness by using the raised hand function. Steve, good evening and welcome.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good. Good. I don't know whether it was the image and the combination of the image and the message that what came to mind to me was the TV show Mission Impossible, where the tape would play mysteriously and then issue instructions and then dissipate. And I can imagine that in our earliest formation of awareness, that kind of tape playing for us and giving us instructions on how to navigate and what influences do we choose to fall under to navigate all the impressions that come our way? And how do we transform those? We came into this world just a little less than the gods, just but with eminent potential. And there are very clear instructions on how to manifest that. So it's like a Mission Impossible mission.
Yes. Yes. If you choose to accept it.
You choose to accept it.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Steve. Thank you. David, please.
Yes. Good evening, everyone. The word journey stuck out for me in the reading, and I use that word a lot when I'm talking to people about, you know, the things they're learning about themselves and about life, you know, whether it's other work students or, you know, people who are not in the work. But it struck me that I use that word, or we use that word, so much. And it, you know, it connotes that we're going from one place to another, but that place is interior. And it's, you know, a different state of being, or, you know, a higher level of consciousness, rather than somewhere on the horizontal plane. you know, a journey through time, going from one physical location to another, for instance. And so it just struck me as kind of interesting to think of being on a journey, but not really going anywhere, you know? And the passage about there, it's an ascent and a descent. You know, that reminded me of our position in the ray, and also of the, you know, it tells me that the journey, so to speak, is in the vertical dimension, not the horizontal. And it's all there, you know, the whole ray is right there. And maybe that's what the last bit about, you know, being fully human, whole and complete, is about. It's about, you know, really living the whole ray, and knowing that that we can consciously move up the ray. That's a blessing.
Yes, yeah. It is indeed.
Thank you, David.
Thank you. And Bob, I saw your hand up for a moment and now it's gone. Would you care? There you are. Welcome. You have to unmute, sir. There you go.
David stole my thumbnail, so I just decided to take my hand down.
Well, you could say amen.
I could say amen. And the message I got received is, I am here to take a journey. Wow. That really sent shockwaves through me.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Bob. Someone else. We have time for a couple of more. Margaret, I was hoping a woman would join in the fray too.
Hello. I wanted to talk about the stop signs because I had a thought about all the terminology in the email and how it's so wonderful to refer back to it. And that reminded me of the stop signs, because you stop and you review and you think, and that's what you do when you self-remember or non-identify, or there's so many different terminologies, and it's very helpful. So it's a wonderful journey, and I'm going to keep going forward.
Very good. Thank you, Margaret. It's good to be with you in this journey. Jack or Jackie or both.
Well, the opening read, what is man that you are mindful of? This absolutely the psalm that just tears right into my heart.
Yes.
And I read it and combined with the entire lesson message was that it was like Nickel saying, what's wrong with you people? You've been going to classes all these years and you're reading this stuff. And sometimes I feel like I'm in that dilemma. In the 20 or so years in the work. And so I think, wow, what is man that you are mindful of him? Dr. Nickel, thank you for reminding me, and thank you for reminding people 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And wishing that we become, not become, recognize our lineage. So I've been awestruck by this lesson, and I'm so glad we're here.
I am too. Thank you, Jack.
And Jackie. I'll jump in there if I may.
Oh, please do.
That the journey is a descent and an ascent. And I remember that my teacher, Tim Cook, once said, you have to go down 7 inches to go up 7 inches. Mm-hmm. And that we despair sometimes, I certainly do, over the descent. But I recognize later when I'm in an ascent, the extreme value of the descent in our development, yes, and the gratitude for the entire journey. It is an adventure all the way around.
All the way.
Happy birthday, Jackie.
Is today Jackie's birthday?
Yes.
Hallelujah that you chose to celebrate it with us. Happy
Absolutely.
Birthday, dear
Jackie.
It's my
Jackie. Family.
Oh, how beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. And so we'll have very quickly Cammie and then Catherine, if you can.
Hello, everyone. I am also struck by the word journey, and I was also moved by the reassurance that we have instructions and that there are signposts and wayshores. Mm-hmm. And September is a beautiful time for this kind of deeper self-knowing that we journey into in September. And I think of the monarch butterfly, and I'm way up here in Bayfield, Wisconsin, oh, and wow, the super monarchs are getting ready to head your direction, mm-hmm, down into Texas. And I know that's your state insect, and you are important folks for that monarch. And nobody really understands how the monarch knows how to get to Mexico, an important part of its evolutionary cycle. But there's a great quote by Bryant McGill that says, inside each of us is a marvelous compass, one that greatly favors life, freedom, and vitality. Mm-hmm. And the monarch does that so beautifully. And for me is my September teacher to remember that journey that trusts the inner compass and the practices that invite us to do that descent into our knowing so that we can ascend to our Mexico, wherever that might be.
Thank you, Cammie. That's beautiful, beautiful. And Catherine.
I'm mostly just saying something because it's nerve-wracking to say something, and I thought, well, I better just say something. But also what everyone else was saying about the journey. And I used to, a long time ago, wonder what the purpose of my life was. And I, you know, once I got out of college and started working, I was like, this can't be it. And so I was just listening to the verse and how it says to manifest our gifts, or I guess the purpose of our life. I feel, well, the purpose of my life is this journey school and this and CCH. And I'm so, like you were saying in the beginning of class, how it, I feel so gifted with it. So that's, I'm glad that I figured out what my purpose is here on this planet, because I did spend some time wondering, like, if this is all there is, I got to go somewhere else.
Thank you so much, Catherine. I'm very glad you're here at this spot in the here and now. Well, Cammie reminded us about September. I have it in my heart with some degree of hope that we will also have a September and a real fall. But it marks the beginning of our fall series. And I'm very pleased that Donald Janung will be the initiator into this first of the new series, Into Higher Body. So good evening and welcome, Donald.
Good evening, everyone. And it is a blessing to be part of the wrap up and the beginning. And what a summer it's been with the practices. So as a wrap up, you know, with our being on recess last week, we have the opportunity now to just to recap what we worked on through the summer and what we were exposed to. And so our review is, what did you discover about your body? its energies and the practices that support and nourish your embodied existence. And so we had so many postures, eating, sleeping, etc. And where do you need to make further efforts? Where can you rest more confidently in God's grace? So before we go into our program tonight of unpacking a powerful triad of ideas with personality, essence, and real I, let's wrap up with some of the things that we've experienced throughout the summer in these practices. As we get started and wait for the next hand, I'm going to tell you that there were a couple of things that were very meaningful for me. And one was bringing more attention to disconnection of the centers before I go to bed at night. And you know, as a guy, you reach a certain stage in life where chances are you're going to get up more than once during your nighttime rest. And that's just the way it is. However, disconnecting the centers can certainly make that rest time much more meaningful and effective between the interruptions, if you will. And another place that I had a lot of attention to was relating food and how food and the amount that I eat, when I eat, what I eat, and how it affects my access to will. And my diet has changed in recent years, it's changed twice. So I'm on the third intervention. The first one was a free flow of just being a glutton and doing anything I wanted. The second one was a time where I needed to eliminate a lot of the sugars in my diet. Not only just so my children would stop calling me the donut creep, but also because it really affected my access to willpower. And I began to notice that. And the third was when I started to age a little bit more and the mass went off and the bloating started, I realized, my goodness, I'm starting to feel very lethargic because of what I'm taking in. And so attention needed to be given to what was being taken in and has changed again so that there's that vitalization, because when the vitalization is low, access to willpower is stretched as well. And that's counterproductive to my real aim. So it's practices, it's examples like this, I think, that are really helpful, that we have a lot of opportunity to embody from our summer content, which in all the years that I've been a part of the Journey School and the 10th Band School and the work with the Church of Conscious Harmony, can honestly say, this was the most practical series of studies that I've ever been a part of. Very, very practical. Sometimes we don't get that close. You know, we don't get that personal. This was very personal, and I certainly appreciated and grew from it. Linda, thank you for leading us off in this part of our class.
Well, I haven't spoken before because I'm really very new. But this summer, to have started in July, and then to have had all of these practices, I feel like I was a baby in that. But I did take them on in small bites. And then I decided when in water was, and swimming, which is one of my favorite things, I had to take one day, drive to the coast, and float in the ocean. Mm-hmm. Remind myself that there was something in my past that I was able to contact and be in union with all things. Because when I float in the ocean, it's as though I'm touching every continent and I'm just part of this small piece of the ocean that goes everywhere. So just a little bit about the summer. Again, the baby and all these little steps I'm taking. And I think as far as one of the practices, considering the life that's given to me through the food that I eat and my blessing of those that food became very important to me during the summer.
Thank you. Yeah. The symbolism you use of floating in the great ocean is one that for me is rather personal, because during times of centering prayer and just times of practicing self-remembering, I feel myself as part of the great ocean of the material world that comes from the light world, that comes from the divine, and that ocean symbolism is very powerful. So although I'm not near an ocean, it must be wonderful to be having that type of prop support in your practice of self-remembering. Beautiful, Linda. And welcome. I'm glad we're studying together. Brother Steve.
I thought this section was really fascinating for me because it forced me to acknowledge my body, which I tend not to do. And so there was a series of techniques to create an inner stop, because normally my body just is an obedient obeyer of my will. And it just is silent. And to tune into that and what its needs are, and to create enough inner separation to look at my body from a distance, to self-observe that center that is so often ignored, I think in many ways is prepares us for our death, because our death is the jettisoning of body sensory away from the other centers. And if you believe in a Kesgen body or a soul body, it's really going to be a mix of higher emotional and higher intellectual center that goes off, but it's not in touch with any sensory experience. So how do we prepare ourselves for that as we age? And I just thought about that. That is talking about an assignment we have in life. Our final exam is our death. So
yeah,
morbid, but that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I mean, how many of our teachers ahead of us on the journey say that, so much of the later stages of our journey are about preparing for death. Yeah, I remember Jim McKeown asking Bernadette one time, it's like, okay, if you've died to yourself already, then what happens at death for you? She said, I think her response was resurrection. What else is there? And it was so simple. And in matter of fact, it's like, yeah, I guess so. So to be so non-identified with the body and see its oneness and not have that that experience of it being a particularity is really a blessing. Steve, I got to tell you that what you just described, I would love to have that experience more often, because my personality type is so identified with the body that it's very difficult to not have that experience. So blessings for you, man. But and I also realize in saying that is each of us are getting exactly what we need, right? Yeah, thank you. Hey, Patsy. Can't quite hear you yet, Patsy. There we go.
Okay. Well, I have had a fabulous experience like you have. This whole lesson plan just met me where I needed to be met. And I, you know, for 100 years have been working on transformation. And I'll have to say that my body found out what transformation was about. It had no clue. The heart and the head had been monopolizing the whole thing. So this has been a fabulous opportunity for this one. And as you know, I closed one octave in my life with the loss of a very dear friend this past month. And how else could I more recognize the journey of the body in this octave closure and loss of this friend, and her memorial service and her family coming from afar, and the whole experience was, I have to say, wonderful, because it closed in a way that you might want to have in anybody's life. And I discovered with every single step of the way through this section that I learned something tremendously important to me, and by way of transformation. I'll not be the same again.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to more preparation for death. And in anticipation of resurrection.
Yeah. Patsy, as you were speaking, I kind of wondered that, we've known each other for some time. And, as the body slows down, and especially as you said that a great deal of your time and attention had been in the intellectual and emotional center, do you find that they are slowing down a little bit, which is giving more opportunity for attention in the moving center? Or is the moving center simply more available now because it has slowed down?
This person doesn't know what slow down is. I was born with an energy like you wouldn't believe, and I still have more than most people, and certainly of my age group. It's just a natural thing. I can't take credit for it because I just inherited it. And so I have to compare for myself and say that it doesn't feel like slow down to me. It feels like an enhanced learning. I learned so much through this section. And so the intellect was enchanted with the learning, and the emotional part of myself was delighted with that learning. And it's the body that has been left out that got to get on board this time. And became a part of the deal. My type doesn't even know they have a body. And so they have to work real hard to say, oh, so you're hungry, you need to eat, okay. You need to sleep, okay, we'll rest. I mean, it's total denial of the needs. And until they're just demanded, so that this is now more of a delight to include the body. Not, it doesn't feel like a separate entity. It feels more incorporated into the emotional and intellectual centers together.
Yeah.
And that's what's different.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. You remember we were together in a Friday night one night, and Tim talked about the different centers and parts of centers, and he kind of said it's like cooked spaghetti. You know, they interweave. You know, and it's hard to pull one out and separate them out like that. Through self-observation, we begin to see some patterns and common grounds that help us in that way. Thank you, Patsy. It's good to be with you this evening.
Thank you. You too.
Welcome. Ken or Sandra? Good evening, Ken.
Good evening. I just wanted to kind of jump off of something that Jackie said.
Ken, you just went muted. Reset that, please.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, something Jackie said.
Yes, Jackie mentioned the descent as well as the ascent. And to me, that's what this whole practice or the practices around the body was about. To me, it was the best example or the best understanding of a descent into hell that I can come up with, that these places in the body where I'm the most asleep and the practices give an opportunity to bring consciousness all the way down to the bottom of the ray. It was very enlightening to me to make that connection that you do indeed have to go all the way down and descend before you can arise, and that you can't let go of something you don't possess. And I know I don't possess the body right now. So
that saying of Gurdjieff's that we have to come under more laws in order come under fewer, and sometimes that saying seems so obscure. But what you're speaking about right now is exactly the experience of that coming under more laws in order to come under fewer laws. And I appreciate the sentiments and that and the experience of that as well. Thank you. Welcome. Do we have anybody else that would like to share on some of the things, something that they may have experienced from the practice? Rachel.
Hey, good evening. Yeah. These practices have brought me home to my body. I always thought that I was pretty body aware, and maybe in some ways I have been, but specifically it's been being able to feel good in my body and not in a using it kind of way, but just finding rest, what feels good, swimming in bodies of water that are cold. That feels good to me. I live in Montana, so there's a lot of them around. Slowing down, resting, slowing down and eating. And I've got two kids, so there wasn't a lot of experiences around that. But when there were, they were rich. And I just, like many have mentioned, the descent and the ascent. I mean, for me, they occur simultaneously. It's not like this and then this. When I go into the depths experienced in my in the way that I do in my body, I feel held in this world. But then I also experience in my depths suffering. I see your suffering. I see mine. But I'm also held in that. And there's really nothing to fear in that place. But it's also sometimes, me and my work partner were talking about this, the depths feel so connecting. Not because of the suffering, that just kind of, for me at least, seems to be there. But then I find myself, you know, not consciously, but coming back into the horizontal to get a cup of coffee and go, what body? I don't know, you know, and, but here is where I want to live. And that's where I feel the safest. And in these practices, it's been a deepening of that and an appreciation of my body and the role it plays and knowing, my place in this universe. And, I had, and this was before, I just want to share this one thing because I don't really share this with in many other places, but about 8 months ago, I had a dream where I was in my dream came, I believe it to be a guide. I don't really know, but he looked at me and he said, a quantum shift is happening. And I looked at right at him and I said, what do I need to do to be a part of this shift? And he said, you need to give yourself unconditional love and acceptance for 5 minutes a day. And that's been also a part of my practice and in doing these practices. It's loving myself unconditionally just as I am. And it's, yeah, it's really, there's so much depth in it.
Yeah.
Sorry for going on a lot.
No, that's precious. Thank you for sharing that and anchoring it outside of yourself. And that's one of the very beautiful things that we do as a church community. It's a very monastic existence in a way, is that we serve as confessors and listeners for each other. And it's a safe zone for that. And especially when we're working on a question left in the homework is, you know, where can we rest more confidently in God's grace? That's a perfect example of that. Beautiful.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. Well, friends, let's jump right into personality. So I'm going to give us just a rundown of some different points to consider regarding this idea of personality. We'll take a break. We'll have a moment to talk about it, and then we'll move to essence. We'll do the same, and then we'll go to real I. So some things about personality, and if you hadn't had the opportunity yet to read the email for the week, it's fabulous. It's really fabulous. And if you spend much time going through the index to the commentaries, interestingly enough, you'll find a very, very long listing of references to Nichols' writings about personality. You'll find a lot, but less regarding essence. And when you get to real I, not much at all. And there's some good reasons for that. And we'll talk about that when we get to the real I part. But first, some things about personality for us to set the table with here. Personality is a function of relationship in life. Each of us has it. It's acquired. We didn't come here with it. We may have come with some predispositions that may have been related to our genetic pool, et cetera. But our personality is acquired. And in the work, it's called what? Our first what? Yeah, our first education. So our personality is formed as our first education. And depending on some of those predispositions and what we're here for, what our purpose is on the planet, our center of gravity will be either as what the work refers to as man number one, man number two, or man number three. So in quickly reviewing this together, man number one is based in what center? Moving center. That's right. Man number two, emotional center, and man number three, intellectual center. And then the work finally, it refines that a little bit more, and it says, okay, so you may be a number one man. What's your second center right following that? That is of more, that's more active. And then finally, the third one will be last. So in my part, my personality is a 1-3-2 man, which means that primarily it's a moving center man with an intellectual center second, and the most deprived is the emotional center. Some of us are going to be just the opposite. We're going to be maybe a number two man, a 2-3-1 or a 3-1-2, different combinations. But you can see why on a night like tonight, when we have different friends talking about their experiences, some people speak and you can just really take in what they're saying. It's like, yeah, I get that. I can relate to that. And probably that has a little bit to do with this personality, how it's reformed, and how the energies kind of interact, familiar or not so familiar. Yeah. Sometimes when someone very dear and close to me are talking, I think to myself, what planet am I on? Or is this person on a different planet? I mean, we're just like going to different directions. And it's like, oh, yeah, of course. Donald, you're judging everybody according to your personality, this acquired at first education. So the third thing, the second thing then is our center of gravity will be man number one, two, or three. The third is that personality is kept alive by imaginary I, false personality, mechanical attitudes and beliefs, our habits, our thoughts, judgments, and four, sensual thinking, that is thinking only from the evidence of the senses. These are the things that keep personality alive. Let's break those down just a little bit. Part four, number four. The part of the personality called imaginary I will do its best to prevent transformation. Now, imaginary I is the God, me, the me God, the Donald guy. That's the imaginary I. And it is kind of, it's juxtaposed or counterposed to that which we're going to talk about later called real I. But when there's no evidence of God, and what my personality wants is all that it knows and sees, that's the effect of imaginary I. That's personality. Let's go five. False personality belongs to personality, and it's referred to by Nicol as the guiding devil of personality. The false personality is the guiding devil of personality. And so that false personality is that array of many eyes that, again, are very selfish and very limited in the world scope of what they see. Number six, in terms of third, fourth, life is a neutralizing force for personality. Life and the world act as neutralizing force to keep personality alive. So when we're in a power struggle about something that we want to manifest, and the neutralizing force, the third force, is life, that's for sure that we're acting in personality. When the third force is changed and it becomes the work, there's an entirely different energy involved, and we'll talk about that shortly here. Number seven. There is no ascent in the scale of being through personality. It did not descend into this earth life as essence did, but was made by life. Personality is formed on the horizontal plane. It doesn't move with us out of this world. Now, I think that's very important to understand. It has been for me. That when we speak about personality and false personality, you know, that false personality is the really heavy load of identification. And the work says we're under 96 orders of laws. The personality in general, though, is under 48 orders of laws. And it's very helpful for us to remember that the personality has a purpose, and it's necessary. It's a very necessary purpose. I remember being in a small discussion once, when somebody very close to Father Thomas said, "You don't think Father Thomas has a personality? You're not around him much, are you?" Well, I did a video project with Bernadette Roberts, and some of the things that happened during that video project, you would think, this is no self? And then a minute it was over, it was like, okay, sweetie, now what are we going to do next here? You see, there was no identification. It's very important for us to recognize that the personality, as we said in number one, is a function of a relationship in life. The personality is always going to be with us. It's how that we interact in life. But it's a question of identification. What is speaking? Is it the lower part, the imaginary I, the false self speaking through personality? Is it the personality's just regular pattern, which was the case with Thomas and Bernadette? Is essence speaking through it, but its interaction with life is essential. Essence, real I, are going to speak through the personality. Number eight, personality becoming passive is a great task and cannot be done until you can observe personality to some extent and see where it impedes or drains force. It cannot be done until we observe personality and see where it impedes and drains our force. Prior to studying the work, probably a lot of us, and maybe those that are in the initial stages of the work, have come to this and is like, you know, what are these people talking about, this thing called personality, and that there's something called a real I, and that I'm not this permanent, definite thing, and that I'm asleep. I'm not asleep. I'm awake right now. I'm listening. We're talking. We're engaging. You know, what's going on here? But a little bit of time in working with self-observation, where we take this inner sense of observation, we start looking from the inside at ourselves and how the personality is interacting with the world. Now, all of a sudden, we begin to see some of these ideas and experience them in person, the work is talking about. Number nine, help is necessary to make personality passive. What is this help? What does that mean? Help is necessary. And what is that help? Commentaries, scripture, the contemplative dimension of our lives, centering prayer, work partners, journey groups, our daily devotions. All of these are help. They are guidelines. They're what we were talking about earlier. And several people talked about, you know, the practices and those that are ahead of us and the ways that have been shown for us. This is the help that is here for us. Number 10, self-observation spotlights personality, a prison with buffers, negative states, opinions, and conventional thoughts. So through self-observation, through observing ourselves, we will begin to spotlight particular patterns that illuminate our identification. That is to say, the laws, the heavy laws that we are under in our low ascension, away from the presence of God, the realization of the presence of God in the moment. Number 10. Go inward and get behind with personality and self-observation. We go inward and get behind oneself little by little so that one sees personality acting and does not agree with the way it acts. This is a first step. We begin to see Donald acting out in relationships. And from that observation, if there's any real measure of completeness in it, in that observation, a part of it will be the feeling that, my gosh, something has my life force, and this does not feel good. This is not what I want my life to be like. And you realize it's an energy pattern that is in there, and it is a habitual vibration that my body is reacting with to impressions in life. So that's a very important component there, that going inward from ourselves, we begin to see what's acting on us, and we don't agree with the way that it acts. Number 11, with inner feeling and self-observation, we realize the personality makes us feel very uncomfortable because we're being used by something. You know that feeling? Through observation, it's like, why is it going there? Why is it reacting? Why is it taking the bait? We become very uncomfortable with some of these patterns of personality. Number 12, energy in the personality must be substantially transferred to essence. So now we're at the heart of the work. Because the work is telling us that this personality and false personality, which is an aspect of personality, it has our energy, it has our life force. And it's no wonder we get up in the day and we're all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and ready to go out into the world. And then we get into the world, and after a day of being in the world, by evening time, we're like all worn down and the energy is all gone, and we realize as we begin our evening practices, like, oh my gosh, he's been there all day and the life force is gone. And you realize, wow, this is a lot of energy that has been used, a lot of life force that's been used mechanically by these eyes and by the personality. That energy is our energy life force that needs to be transferred to essence. And 13, personality can be used if one can make it make its power negligible at will. That's a very big point. Personality can be used when we can make its power negligible at will. That's when you realize that there is something really powerful in you that is growing. When your personality is acting because it is acting from something higher, real eye or essence are moving through it. In 14, personality surrounds essence like flesh surrounds a nut. Increasing flesh will not make a tree. So this whole idea in the work that we have to come into this work with rich personalities is a really big deal and is a very important one. You know, anybody that's been in this work for a while will realize that a very strong developed personality is a good thing. Right, Marianne? And I say that out of confirmation because Marianne and I worked together for a long time, so she's seen it in me. It is something that we have to have. Gurdjieff has said would not take students that didn't have a good, strong personality. So when we start early on in the work, we find out we're a 1-3-2 man. Part of the role here then is for me in the work is to begin to develop man number two, the feeling man, get more in touch with my feelings, integrate them more with the body and the intellect, and likewise with the intellect, integrate that more with the feelings and the body. So we are continuing to develop this thing called personality so we can make this movement towards man number four, who in the work is called who? Man number four is called whom? Yeah, balance man. Man number four is balance man. And balance man is able to use the center, the right center for the right purpose. So this idea of putting ourselves under these conditions of learning and exercises and daily practices and aims is all about developing these other parts of our existence, all three centers. And that's why I so love what Patsy was reporting about the work that she's doing in all three centers and balancing and bringing them together. It's also why it's really important when we do self-observation. It's that self-observation is done in all three centers. When I'm observing Donald being edgy, this is being called being edgy. These are the thoughts of it. This is the feeling of it. These are the physical sensations of it. I put all three together as one experience with all three centers and I give it a name. And then we move to the next thing of recognizing and stating in the same way, intellectually, emotionally, and physically, this is not I. This is an energy that's moving through me. This is not who I am. And then from there, we then have free energy to begin to practice self-remembering and hopefully in the same way. In knowing, in feeling, and in sensing. Okay, let's take a little break from personality before we go to essence and see if there's any questions or even, you know, something that's really good that's really meaningful in a large group like this is even when you have an aha moment, you hear something or come across something, it's like, wow, that's really good. It's so often, when someone has done that for me, I was like, wow, you know, they're taking it in at a different level. And I'm hearing it in their voice that aha has a lot of meaning to it. Am I feeling the resonance energy? And if I'm not, often I want to because of that aha moment. So it's not always a question, but it's a relationship. It's a state and evaluation of it. And also it may be useful to somebody else. Hello, Gay. Hmm. Gay, hang on just a second, dear. You were, I thought that you went unmuted and then it went muted. There you go.
How's that?
We can't miss a word that you say.
All right, not still no?
You're good.
Okay. I wanted to speak about my experience of identifying what kind of man or woman I was. When that idea was first introduced to me, I had a great deal of trouble with it. Really feeling, first of all, I knew what I was not. I knew that my emotional center was absent totally from my experience. That I knew. So I knew that number two would have been my third number, but I couldn't discern which one was my first one. Was it the body or was it the intellect? And what I've come to realize over time is that it is my first center is the body. But I didn't recognize it because I was too close to it. I was so in it that I couldn't separate and see that I was a body-centered person. So I don't know if that might be helpful to some other people that are really confused about that, but I was confused about it for the longest time. Yeah. Now I see, looking back actually, that all of my concerns in life were centered around my comfort, whether I had gotten enough sleep, whether I was hungry, whether I was overexerting, all of that was like really there for me, but I couldn't see it because I was in it.
Yeah. So. Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Gay. That's the same experience that I had unpacking it early on as well. Thank you. Yeah, Tammy.
Hi, Donald. Good to see you again.
It is good to be together again, Tammy. Thank you.
I was jotting notes furiously, and I think you mentioned number four, and then you said something that just made my eyes pop because it resonated. And you said, it does what it can to prevent transformation. What was that?
Yes. Imaginary eye.
That I'm going to have, I don't know, I need to look at that more because I've had a feeling lately of simultaneously feeling like I'm on the brink of a really important transformation and like a toddler kicking and screaming, resisting and finding myself really frustrated why these complications, these nuisances are coming up to bother me. So I have a question I'm sorry, which was number four again?
Imaginary eye.
How do you discern if that's really a disruption or if there is a purpose in the pause, a purpose in that slowing down?
Yeah. If you find that the purpose of the slowing down has an energy to it that's related to your spiritual transformation, through discernment, you know then it's the right thing. If you feel that imaginary eye is, you know what, I think I'd rather take in this movie tonight than do my devotions. Or, you know, something says to you, okay, it's time to stop, move yourself away from the plate. You've eaten enough. And another party said, no, man, this is too good. I'm just going to keep on chomping through. Imaginary eye will get in the way and keep us from awakening. Sometimes, we want to make an aim. We see the homework or the exercise and we want to make an aim, but yet there's parts of us that will distract us even from identifying with that aim and saying, I want this.
Mm-hmm.
So imaginary eye is going to try to keep us asleep.
Well, that was really insightful for me and gives me a target for some work.
Yeah, good. Thank you, Cammy. I see a lot of hands, but we're going to go with Kathy, and then we'll move on to essence. And hopefully your hands will have a chance to talk about after the essence part. Good evening, Kathy.
Unmute. Hi there.
Hello.
I have a question as a newcomer to the work. And as I'm listening to my notes here, the intellectual center, the emotional center, and the body center, and as you describe them, my question for you and anybody else who wants to weigh in is, when, for example, when I feel like I'm creating something, I'm in my art and I'm doing that, to me, it feels like I'm engaging all three. Because emotionally, I feel such happiness, joy. I'm working with my body. My hands are always busy. And intellectually, I'm still learning. I'm learning. I'm making mistakes. I'm learning from them. I'm following directions. I'm creating new things. So would that be an example of when people are in their creative mode that they are blending all three centers?
I would say yes to that. And you know, when you look at a musician who's in the zone, an athlete that's in the zone, a knitter who's in the zone, an artist who's in the zone, when you're in the zone, you're probably in the intellectual part of the center. And then when you really, when you're really good at it and really creating, all three centers probably are active in the intellectual part. And so that is, I mean, that's wonderful. That's part of the idea of creating, is to be in those inner centers, or inner parts of centers rather, and all three of them working in union with each other. I mean, if you have, you take a top performing athlete, if they're not intellectually in that zone and they're not emotionally in that zone and physically in that zone, they are not going to be at the peak of the performance, right? Same thing with the music. You got to be, so I think you're there, but that's really not going to be a part of the, that's wonderful in realizing parts of centers and how they're active in us. But it probably is not going to be all that useful to us in determining whether we are centered as man number one, man number two, man number three. A broader picture of life is really necessary for that, of patterns in our life.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's talk quickly about essence and do the same thing. Item number one about essence. Essence comes down from above and is clothed in a body, which is built out of materials obtained from both parents and limited to them. Essence comes down. Item two, through the body, essence gets in contact with the world. So it comes down, the work says, it is inhabited in a body, it is growing as the body grows. Well, not the essence isn't necessarily growing, but the body is growing. And then essence is able to interact with the world. It's in contact with the world through the body. Point three. Though intimately connected with the body, it's not the same as the body. Body perishes, but essence does not. When we take ourselves as our bodies, we get a wrong impression of ourselves. One result is that it's very, very difficult to remember ourselves. When we see ourselves, and that's part of the challenge when we first start this work, is that we are so identified with the body. That's what we've been learning. We've learned for decades and decades. This is who we are. And so this whole idea that we are something separate from it takes a great deal of a second education to begin to instill in us. Four, one cannot see essence. To some, essence is nonsense. And that's why it's sometimes, again, this is very difficult for folks to take in the work. The idea that this thing called essence, because the sensual mind can't get around it. It's not physical. Five, nor can the sensual mind grasp that essence enters and leaves by a dimension not accessible to our very limited senses. Psychological thinking can grasp this. Sensual thinking, no. Six, because essence depends descends from a high place, an ascending octave must exist in man connected with this descent. That is to say that we've come down, and because we've come down, we know that that ray exists within us. And so now our role is the return journey, ascending. So if we came down, we must be able to ascend. It has to be there. Think of the parable of the prodigal son, you know, coming down from the riches, going out, recognizing the poorness of personality and how it has lived its life and what it's gotten us into, eating pig slop. And now you begin to realize, okay, it's time for the ascent back to the Father. Number seven, the essence grows only through becoming more and more conscious of personality and slowly, gradually, what personality is in you. So as we become more and more tuned in to what this thing called personality is, it becomes more passive. Energy is taken out of it, and that energy begins to feed essence. And that's why personality and its growth is so important. Number eight, essence can only grow through truth. Nine, lying kills essence. Number 10, esoteric teachings must reach essence. Esoteric teaching is always about the kingdom of heaven. It's always about inner development possible to man, and namely about the growth of essence. Essence cannot grow unless it is fertilized by the word of God. 11, you must not think that a dramatic moment comes in which your essence suddenly becomes active and personality passive. By grace, it's very gradual. And that's why the word coaches us right early on in the commentaries in volume one. This is a long, long road. And some of us think, gosh, why can't this be done quicker? Please accept the grace that it's a long, long road. Because when the big shocks come and the buffers come down, they are very painful. It's very graceful that it is such a slow process. But it requires this thing called metanoia, this change of mind. And 12, essence must develop for us, for real I to come. This is the goal. When it comes, we become it. When essence grows, is now available. It becomes available at a certain point for real I to be experienced in us. And when real I comes through to us, we become it. And 13, the growth of essence means an eternal change and not a temporal change is happening. Essence is deathless, and so not in time, as are the body personality. So this thing that in the work that you'll read about called a recurrence and drawing the same life again may have seemed like a bunch of balderdash for some point, but if you begin to think about it from these ideas of essence, you realize that a change of essence becomes a permanent change for us as we begin to move in the spiritual journey. When we leave this planet, the work teaches that we leave, we've paid that karma. We have learned this lesson. And so whatever is next for us is at a new level based on what's next in our journey. We only have a couple minutes left, so I'm going to jump in real quickly to this idea of real I. One, the only part of us that can get in touch with real I is essence, not personality. Two, real I, master, is fully developed. Three, when real I becomes master in you, what happens in external life would very little affect you. Your center of gravity will remain in yourself. That's a good check, isn't it? Want to know when I'm experiencing this thing called real I? When what happens out there doesn't move in me. Number four, only real I can love consciously. So I'm certain that many of us have had experiences of real eye. We just maybe didn't know what to call it, or having it frequently. But the idea of real eye is you have those moments where you know all together and you feel all together. And so it's like in a flash, you can see the oneness of everything around you. You can see it knowing it. You can see it feeling it. And it is a sensual and it is an emotional feeling. And it's like, wow, this is oneness. I can feel the oneness. And in those moments, you'll also notice that the particularity of yourself tends to not be an observation point, but rather you're in that ocean. I think it was Margaret was talking about before. You're in that ocean of oneness. These are the experiences of real I. The reason that the work probably doesn't say much about real I is all of our attention should truly be on the fundamentals of practicing self-observation of the personality, the steps of non-identification, and then the practices of self-remembering, so that our essence can be fed. And as our essence is fed and grows, then real I has the opportunity to come through. And real I, as it says, is fully developed. The master is fully developed in us. After Marianne, do I have time for one question or do I turn it over? One question. Thank you. Alan. Okay, Ms. Alan. Freda, you've got your hand up. I'd love to hear what you have.
Okay, this isn't a question, it's a quote. And cometh from afar, not an entire forgetfulness and not an utter nakedness, but trailing clouds of glory do we come from God who is our home. William Wordsworth.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you, Alan. Freda, we have just a moment.
So can I talk about personality or a question on personality?
Yes, you can. And I'll try to answer it quickly.
Balanced man. And yeah. I love this, I need clarification that man four can use the right center for the right purpose.
Yeah.
So for me, balanced, I think all three would be on board, but it didn't sound that way.
Okay, so you're right. All three will be on board, but the idea is sometimes we need to connect with the moment intellectually more than emotionally. Sometimes we need to connect with a moment emotionally more than when I'm with someone who's in pain and is in a very dark place. I don't need to connect with them emotionally. That's intellectually rather, or physically. So that's the idea of using the right center at will.
So man four would know which center to use because he's balanced.
Absolutely. Gurdjieff said that that balanced man would be able to be with any type of person in any way necessary.
Yeah, that's great. That makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Fred. All right, friends, we've got a rich exercise in our homework this week. And so I will not bother reading it because it is in there and it will be a gem if we put it to practice. Like usual, we just don't have enough time to go further than what we've done tonight, but there's a lot for us to work with. So thank you.
So thank you, Donald. What a great blessing this evening has been. There's so much. I think the whole explanation of personality, essence, real I was the clearest summary I have ever heard. Thank you. I'm very grateful. And also for everyone who shared to amplify what was being said. So how rich we are. There's nothing left to do except to have a closing prayer and to say goodnight. So protect us, Lord, as we stay awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace and great gratitude. Amen.